Because I got some that I think will be worth the cool intro. I think you'll love this.
Okay, go.
Okay, I want to tell you about what we're doing in the fall.
Okay. Just real quick. My name's Chris, and your name is?
Kyle.
And this is Tear Gas and Gumdrops, the podcast about the pain and sweetness of ministry. What are you doing in the fall, Kyle?
Man, we are totally getting lazy here. Like, normally there's, like, this better intro.
You just feel that way because I put music under it. It's not
good. Oh, that's the point, because I listen to it. Bow, wow, bang, bow, bang, bow. Yeah. here's a sad fact about me. I realized just yesterday that tear gas is two words, not one.
Oh, I did so much research because I was like so scared of messing it up.
Yeah, I was looking for our podcast on my phone to download the new one. I worked out because I'm apparently narcissistic enough to myself.
Like, nothing like sweating and listening to yourself talk.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, these release, such a great distance from when we record. I never remember what we talked about anyway, which is probably dangerous because I recommend people listen to the podcast and what did I say?
Well, this one is time-bound, so we'll release it a little sooner. So good.
Oh, that's true, yeah. So I was looking for it, and I couldn't find it, and so then I went to our page. It was like, oh, it's two words.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, and you came up with two words that are both that way, because I had to look both of them up.
Wait, gumdrops is not one word?
I'm not sure. I think I've got it different. Like, even with all the research I did, like, I don't know. I was, like, Googling for, like, images of a gumdrops box or something like that. I'm not sure I'm not exactly a man known for his consistency in grammar, so...
Really? Because that was like your middle name in college. It's like, hey, look, it's Chris, the man known for his grammar consistency. Morton, hey, how are you doing today?
So,
with whom are you walking?
With whom? I still don't know what that word means, but that's neither here nor there. Kyle, what are you doing this summer?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, we just kind of jib-jabbed, so I don't know if I want to jib-jab. So this fall, we're doing there's a book called... The Zombie Apocalypse Survival Guide for Teenagers, and it's emotional. And I read it like a year ago, looking for resource material for our summer camp. Mm-hmm. And the camp it went in a different direction. And so I am creating, using this book, a zombie-themed 13-week curriculum.
Okay.
I'm really excited about it because we're going to get some student actors from another church to record the scripts that I'm writing. And we're going to play zombie-themed games, and we're going to redecorate the youth room to look like a zombie survival bunker. I'm just really excited about it, because, you know, zombies have been popular now for about 6 years, so now I'm jumping on the train.
That's awesome. Like,
you know, it's a weird walk. Like, yeah. if you do popular stuff too soon, then you're kind of ruining it. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that it's been long enough that this has kind of a retro feel. Because in the modern world, 6 months is enough for something to become retro, right?
Yeah, I just tweeted about the dress being blue and black yesterday. So
yeah, I saw that. Welcome to the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, that's totally on fleek.
Ugh.
do your students use that on fleek?
Not around me. They haven't. I don't. They might at school, but they haven't around me yet.
All right. Well, hey, I have a question for you, Kyle.
Don't you? We got to find a better way to start these segments. All right. What's your question for me, Chris?
What is something that you do every day or every week, you know, just regularly that you hate?
Yeah. Okay. So for those who don't know, I am not only our church's youth and family minister, I'm also our worship leader and coordinator. And one of the things that I have to do as a part of that job is setting up our microphones for praise team. Mm. And it's not a very long task. It's probably 10 minutes max. Mm-hmm. And it's the thing that I hate doing the most. I don't really know why. I think actually I do know why. Because it's monotonous, and I hate doing stuff like that. Like our secretary is on vacation in paradise somewhere, and so I'm having to put our praise team books together. And I was telling our preacher today, I was like, I'm glad she gets to do this because I used to have to do it and I hate it.
Yeah.
Just because I don't like those kinds of monotonous, menial. I mean, they're not menial, they're important tasks.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Microphones are the worst, though.
They are.
Like, they're so we, our church community has been meeting in the same space. We had this crazy lookout for a year and a half that we were in another church's building. They just met on Sunday nights. And that was beautiful. I feel like we had this crazy, what's the word, like honeymoon or something like that. Well, we just finally moved to this elementary school and we're on like week 3 or 4. It's been crazy. Like the first week they didn't let us in for an hour and a half and, you know, all sorts of stuff, like everything that could go wrong. But microphones, seriously, it's like they're possessed. Microphones and soundboards, like you have to every time. Like I have so much respect for our music guy because he has to go in there and check everyone, and I know he's doing the exact same thing every time, and there's always something wrong that has to be fixed. And yeah, it seems incredibly mind-numbing and frustrating, and thank God that there are people that do that. But yeah, I would say a thing that I'm going through a thing right now where I really hate laundry a lot. I mean, I've never been a fan of laundry, but yeah. It's just like, so I have a wonderful woman in my life. And because of that, as you've mentioned, I have a better haircut, but I generally got an entire wardrobe upgrade. But that means that my laundry habits of just like, put it in on cold, wash it. When you get to it, you can throw it in the dryer. Sometime that week, you'll get it dry, and you can generally get by with it. Like, that doesn't work anymore. Like, there are different things that I have to hang. There are different things I have to wash on hot or cold. There are things I have to hang and then dry again, even though they're dry, to make them smelly, the right smelly, not wrong smelly. And it's just not happening. I'm getting some wrinkled, smelly clothes these days right now because I just hate it.
One day I'm going to write a book about our friendship and just talk about your progression from, you know, whatever you were in college.
From the Liberty Spikes to...
Yeah, yeah.
They're not even jeans. They're like this loose canvas pull string that when I look at them, I'm like, those kind of look like sweatpants. And apparently they're super hip. So who knows?
Yeah, I can't wait to write our novel.
Where we like go to chase unicorns and conquer
dragons. No, like we'll travel across the country. I was watching a trailer for the new movie about David Foster Wallace being on tour. And I was like, as you were talking about this, like that's what we should do. You should get a book tour, which means you have to write a book first, and then I'll travel with you, and then I'll write an op-ed piece about my travels with Chris Morton.
There you go.
And we'll call it Tuesdays with Morton.
You've been sitting on that. Well, okay, so here...
Oh, that one came up.
What's that?
That one just came out of the blue.
Yeah. Just
you're welcome.
Improv. Never say no.
Never say... We're in a fire hydrant.
Why is it so red on the inside and the outside?
Anyway.
So... the reason I ask, do you know Kathleen Norris? Have you ever read any of her stuff?
No.
No. Well, she has this beautiful book, or beautifully titled book. Honestly, I haven't read it all the way through, but that's not going to stop me from quoting it. She has a book called The Quotidian Mysteries.
Good grief. Okay.
The full name is The Quotidian Mysteries, Laundry, Liturgy, and Women's Work. And she puts women's work in quotation marks. And she says, here, like, it is a paradox of human life that in worship, as in human love, it is the routine and everyday, or sorry, it is in the routine and everyday that we find the possibilities for the greatest transformation. Both worship and housework often seem perfunctory, and both, by the grace of God, may be anything but.
Like it.
And the reason that I read that quote is because when we're recording this, this is the Sunday before Pentecost, or this past Sunday was Pentecost Sunday.
Yeah.
So, which doesn't matter because it'll be a few weeks before this comes out. This past Sunday was Pentecost Sunday. So for Christians that follow the Christian calendar, we're now to that big white chunk on the calendar, which is just ordinary days. And there are things that come and go, and it leads up. But it's really from between now and Advent for most people who follow the Christian calendar. This is just ordinary days. And there are different traditions around it. But honestly, just having that on the calendar, I find really helpful. Having time set to say, okay, you know, we do celebrate the big stuff, right? We do focus on the incarnation in Advent and Christmas, and we do focus on the pain of crucifixion and the incredible beauty of resurrection in Lent and Easter. But honestly, we don't feel like that most days because we have laundry to do and we have mics to set up. And we have just ordinary days. And a lot of churches spend the ordinary days working their way through different gospel passages. Because at the end of the day, it's just like, we got to go back to Jesus. And just the regular day, our day in and day out is just finding the Jesus life. And so what I was hoping we could talk about today is what Kathleen Norris calls the quotidian mysteries. And she's like, you know, I just side note, she's not calling laundry women's work. She actually uses that in quotation marks to just get at the fact that it is in the really basic day-to-day stuff that we have the opportunity for transformation. So, yeah, first off, just when you hear that, Kyle, like, what do you think? Like, what do you think about ordinary days? What are your ordinary days, both as Kyle Sapp and as a youth minister?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a liturgical standpoint, like, I'm just discovering the ordinary days as a thing, which is interesting when you sent the text to me about talking about this. I had just picked up a book that I was thinking about using as a resource about the ordinary days, that part of the liturgical calendar. And that's I think as I was reading it, one of the lines from the introduction says, we have these ordinary days, and it makes the mountain peaks higher and the deserts drier. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it, just kind of the idea that the church has these moments set aside for these huge celebrations, but it's not always moving somewhere. Yeah. It's not always looking to the next event. That there are times in our life and long stretches of time where just normal stuff is happening. And it's in that normal stuff where the fruit and the seeds that were planted during those happy celebrations really begin to take root and start growing and start bearing fruit in and of themselves. And so just as from a liturgical standpoint, I think that's awesome. And I love that idea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think sometimes in non-church history, church calendar churches, we, at least for me as a youth minister, we always are looking for the next event. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy the idea of, okay, let's not be moved by just the events. Yeah. Let's just enjoy the present and the now.
Yeah.
So liturgically, I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. What do you think, though, like with, well, personally, like how do you do that? Like, how do you, you said that you struggle with going from event to event to event. So like, how do you even, you know, name that as a struggle and approach that? And how do you deal with the fact that some days you just have to do mics or, you know, those kind of things?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's a struggle until you realize that it's just exhausting. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that you can't really name until it hits you, and then you become aware of just how unhealthy it is that you're always, you know, there's that anticipation is kind of a double-edged sword, right? Like, it's exciting, and it builds hope, and it gives you energy to keep going. But on the other end, it's also kind of a reminder of what how life isn't, right, and what isn't around. And so you kind of have to walk, which can, in fact, feed the anticipation and feed the hope, but it can also be kind of a burden. So you kind of have to walk in this weird place where you have to discover the beauty and the value of the normal. Yeah. You know, it's the Brother Lawrence practicing the presence of God.
Yeah, yeah.
Goes out into the garden when he's washing his dishes. And, you know, a few years ago, I thought that sounded ridiculous until I tried practicing it. And it's remarkable to me, just in the general rhythm of cleaning my house and washing my dishes, just how at peace that brings me.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't know if we've had this conversation, but when my house is messy, I've noticed, even when my office is messy, which is pretty awesome, I feel the chaos.
Yeah.
When the house is clean, yeah, there's a peace there. Mm-hmm. And I think ordinary times just kind of help us walk through the, not the extreme mountains and valleys, but just the normal bumps that are along the road, because chaos and peace are always struggling and fighting within our souls. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Did I answer your question?
Well, yeah. Okay. So you said a really good thing about how it is for you as a person, but what I'm wondering is, like, it sounds like everything you just described requires a level of maturity. And even for you, like, you read Brother Lawrence, it sounded terrible, and then you found value as you aged in doing the laundry and doing the dishes. And what I wonder is, you're a youth minister, and, you know, our culture, yeah, so sure, our culture at large wants to go from event to event, and youth ministry wants to push us from event to event. I kind of, from an outside perspective, I look at youth ministry and I feel like part of that is feeding to that teenage mindset that everything is such a big deal. And, you know, so
yeah,
how do you move teenagers from a desire for the next big moment? The zombie thing sounds amazing, but you can't do the zombie thing longer than 13 weeks. You know, did you say 13? You
did. Well, it's our fall, so it's,
yeah,
it's three Sundays. Well, and here's what we do is that for three Sundays, we do this, you know, over the top thing, but then we're going to have a fourth Sunday where we just meet at somebody's house and have a meal.
Yeah.
And it's very simple and relaxing. And we're going to use those Sundays to kind of talk about what it's like to just kind of be together. Mm-hmm. You know, it's we're doing the zombie thing because I've got junior high students who are all really young and new to youth group, so I need something to kind of catch their eye.
Right.
But it's not something, you know, and this is something where this is not something you move them to. Mm-hmm. This is a seed plant because, as you said, it takes maturity, and they're swimming in a culture that is constantly engaging them and asking them to be engaged. And so you're really just kind of giving them a sample and hoping that the spirit moves and clicks so that as they get older, they are developing these practices. And you know, we're giving them a chance to practice them in a lot of ways as we're doing it. So I don't really look at it as like we're moving students somewhere. I think we're just journeying with students wherever they're trying to go, and breathing life and good biblical principles into their story and hoping that the spirit takes hold of their heart. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it definitely sounds hard, and I'm not jealous of that role because, I mean, even as an adult, I hate that sense of FOMO, sense of fear of missing out, that you always got to get to the next event. But I do think that it's I would just, if I were to speak to youth ministers, which I don't, that's why you're here, I would think that, like, I would encourage us to not get sucked in by that, because these kids are so overstimulated already. You know, right now, like, our church is not at the point where we have a youth group. We've got 2 13-year-olds, so we're on our way. But so we have one young lady who's been, you know, she does everything she can with us, but she does go and hang out with this other youth group. And I was asking her what they do, and all they meet once a week for Lectio Divina, and then to ask each other how their week was and pray for each other. And here's this, you know, pretty high energy, stereotypical 13-year-old, and she loves it. That's a highlight of her week, to sit in silence and reflect on scripture together.
Yeah, and, you know, I think one thing that we do is, you know, this is one of our meetings. You know, we meet Sunday morning and we meet Sunday night. And my Sunday morning class is not going to be that engaged. You know, it's not going to be that over the top. You know, there's no major theme there. And we've really dialed back our calendar so that, you know, we're intentional about something outside of a church context, you know, church building context, like once a month. Mm-hmm. And just because their calendars are all so busy, and we recognize that, and we want them to make the space and make the time. And we don't want to burden them with church events either.
Right.
So that we have to define faith by how active you are in the church. So I think one way that we show this subtly is by not having an overbooked calendar.
Yeah.
And another way we show this is by just being involved in their regular days, of just mm-hmm. checking in with them, sending them text messages, and just seeing how they're doing, and encouraging other adults to do the same. And maybe that youth ministry group that practice Lectio, and that's all they do, you know, maybe they've tapped into something that, you know, I haven't considered, or just my students aren't ready yet, because I don't think my students would.
It does seem odd to me, but it does, that, you know, it works for them, and maybe they've cultivated something there. But I do think that what I like about it, and what I like about what you're saying, is, like, we're not going to acquiesce to our culture's desire to just constantly be entertaining. And when it comes to youth ministry, like, that's a losing battle, right? We've talked about that, like, you know, that you're never going to out-entertain. Like, there's nothing that you have that will outrank what's on Netflix right now. So, entertainment-wise. So you can't limit yourself.
I think our youth ministry is way more entertaining than that new Jeanette McCurdy show, The In-Between, that Netflix is only releasing one episode a week.
I missed that saying. One. Okay, well,
I haven't watched it.
I guess they can't like knock them out of the part. Not everything Netflix does is Daredevil.
Truth. Not everything. Yeah, I'm not trying to be Daredevil, but I can be other things.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, okay. So for me as a youth
minister, Daredevil is so good. I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no.
Daredevil is so good, right?
So good.
Like, the scenes are remarkably well done.
I've never seen anything. And I feel weird because I am, like, pacifist and Anabaptist type. But dang, I mean, like, just, like, beaten on. It's crazy.
It's like, and just, like, 3 minute, one shot, no stops, just.
You're talking about hallway scene in the. Is it the very first episode?
Yeah, the hallway scene.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
So, but all of the fights are like that. Like, all of the fights are that, like, oh my gosh, so good.
There's some genuinely innovative stuff. It felt to me like watching Born again. You know, the first time you see, what was the second Born movie? The Born.
Supremacy?
I think that was the third one. Born Conspiracy was the first one.
Identity?
Born Conspiracy is Identity is the first one. Conspiracy is the second one. And Conspiracy is the one where he, like, wraps up a magazine and beats off a guy with a knife with his magazine. And it was just like, I had never seen it.
Yeah.
That's how every episode of Daredevil felt like for me.
Pretty much. So good. Just so good. So anyway, back to ordinary spaces.
So, time. Besides beating people. Okay. I'll just start from the top here. So my ordinary days are a combination of my day-to-day work. So I'm bivocational. So I work as a church planter, but the bulk of what pays the bills for me is other work that I do on kind of web marketing. And it can be incredibly, a lot of it is... it takes up a ton of time. It can be really mind-numbing at times. It is it's super repetitive, and it's not like that fun kind of repetitive. I say fun. As much as I complained about laundry, like their laundry is more engaging than a lot of the things that I have to do there. But just with, you know, church stuff, there's basic things that I have to do. You know, we send out, you know, kind of our equivalent of a bulletin is emails that we send out. And there are a handful of people, you know, I'm meeting with those same people every day. And then a lot of it is just like my own personal spiritual development and spiritual life is like, there's some things that I try to do every day. And, it's hard. It's hard because I am the kind of person who always deals with FOMO, and it's hard to sit still long enough to pray or to do, you know, it's hard for me to turn off a podcast or turn off a television show and just do, to fold my laundry in silence. And, you know, I'll say this too. I think one of the hardest things about like the season that our church plant is in is that we're really grinding it out right now. Like every week we keep doing it, and every once in a while, you know, we come across somebody who really gets it, or we have a moment to invite somebody into our community. So we just had this past weekend. I don't know if this reached the news where you're at, Kyle, but this past weekend we had like kind of the 100-year flood here in Austin. Yeah. I'm fine. But most of the rain or most of the flooding was a little south of me. I just kind of battened down the hatches and stayed in, and it looks like it may start raining again here soon. But we had, you know, one couple that they've got a 6-month-old, and I get a phone call in the worst part of the storm on Saturday, and they're like, we're out of town, we just walked in the door, there's water everywhere, we're trying to clean it up, we have the 6-month-old. And so me and another guy jump in his truck in the middle of this deluge and drive over there. And we were able to unclog the storm drain and get the water level to drop. And we just spent a few hours just like wringing out towels and mopping. And, you know, it's funny because on one level, like that's, you know, compared to checking the mics every Sunday, that's exciting.
Yeah.
That feels like real ministry, you know, whatever that means. On another level, it was still super quotidian, right? I'm literally wring out the towel, throw it in the puddle, grab another towel, wring it out, you know, and even the stuff that, you know, when you're in ministry, you long for those moments where you're connecting, where you're serving, where you see, you know, a need being met, you see someone changing their life. You long for those moments. They're the special moments. but there's a, you know, even that can seem a little quotidian at times, like, oh, here we go again. And yeah, I think there is a piece though. And I think I'm like you, like, I think I remember you. So you mentioned Brother Lawrence, and for anybody who's never read Brother Lawrence, it's what is 16th century monk, I think, maybe 17th century.
Date. I'm always bad at those.
But basically, you know, the abbot didn't respect him a lot, and he, instead of like holding a position of authority, became like the dishwasher. And we have this like small book of letters that he wrote about how he encounters God while washing dishes. And you read it and you're like, man, like there's something going on here that he knows about. Like he has a relationship with God that I really long for. Yet he has a life that I don't want to have, right? I don't want to be the guy who cleans up dishes for the entire place. And, you know, I really, there's a part of me right now who, like, I want to see our church explode. You know, I want to see people doing tangible things to love their neighbor. And I have this vision that someday there will be a community like ours in every neighborhood in Austin. And I want to see people who have never seriously considered the gospel to encounter it. But to get there, it's a long, slow grind. And and in the meantime, I have to spend a lot of time on Twitter because that's my day job. And finding God in the ordinary is tough. Even as a church planter. And so I guess maybe the last thing we can talk about is kind of, I would love to explore what that looks like then to go from maybe disrespecting the ordinary to letting it transform us.
Yeah,
because it sounds like you're a little further on that journey than you used to be. What have you learned? Like, how have you changed where you're open to that?
I think some of it just came from wanting to engage God more, and having trouble, honestly, having trouble sitting still.
Yeah,
I'm not the guy that is going to be really super great at sitting in a dark room praying for 3 hours.
Right.
But I can wash dishes and talk to God, and 2 hours will go by, and just kind of the action of cleaning the dishes and just kind of the repetitive motion of all of that, it helps me focus a little bit.
Yeah.
Whether that's mature or not, I don't know, but you do what you got to do. And even in the act of, like vacuuming the rug or, without overly spiritualizing this, maybe I do overly spiritualize it, but I do all of this stuff on my Sabbath day.
Okay.
Just because it helps kind of be a physical representation of what I'm trying to do on the inside of my soul, which is just kind of clean up. And so first making that a regular routine and, having a desire to get closer, to grow deeper, to be more open, I think has really been what helps me find the beauty in the ordinary.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Like, it sounds like your solution was to try to imitate Brother Lawrence.
It was. It's exactly what I wanted to do.
That was a conscious...
Yeah, it was a, hey, this worked for this guy, let's do this, and let's see how this works. I mean, another part is just, like, within my work day. So, my work week, there are pretty much, it's pretty much nailed down. There are things that have to get done each day, and there's no, that's not going to change a lot. You know, Sunday morning has to be planned, Sunday class has to be planned. It has to be planned within an amount of time that I can send out the information to the volunteers.
Yeah.
Parent emails have to be sent out in an appropriate amount of time to where that information is helpful and useful, stuff like that. Those kinds of things, they have to get done. And, you feel good when you accomplish them, when you set, and so, when you set goals and achieve them, like, maybe this is cheating, but even just the simplest task of making a to-do list and then being able to scratch it off and say, hey I did that today, because ministry can be so abstract sometimes, just finding those little things that can keep you going, so that can remind you yes, there are some of those times you're going to have these big moments, but not every day is going to be a day where a teenager is contemplating suicide or wants to wrestle with the paradox that is Jesus's humanity and divinity. Like, those days are come, but they're not going to be every day. And you, as ministers, we have to find ways to celebrate and give glory to God in the ordinary spaces, in the spaces where you're not going to write a book about it.
Yeah.
So just kind of coming to grips with that mentally was very helpful.
Yeah. And that's huge. You know, one thing, and I don't know if you meant to say this, but one thing that I thought of when you said that was, I think that we have one of the perversities of our individualistic culture is we talk about having to find the right thing that works for us, you know, and we talk about like so you and I both had to take a fair amount of education classes, right? And they talk about different learning styles and things like that. And it sounds like you kind of just submitted and said, well, here's something that worked for somebody else, and I'm going to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
That feels kind of like it goes hand in hand with the ordinary tasks. Like, I'm going to do this basic human thing that everybody has to do, and I'm going to do what's worked for other people. And maybe in time, like, you'll decide that doesn't work. Or maybe in time, you'll tweak it to work for yourself. Or maybe you'll just find, like, it's not that hard. We don't all have to be super individual about it. There are just things that work for a lot of people, and it's good to start there. And I think even the idea of ordinary time, of of having a calendar and breaking out time and saying we're going to focus on these different things at different times is really simple and human and should not be overlooked because it's not individualized and it's not sexy, you know?
Yeah. And that's a key point there, what you said there. It's not sexy. Like, we are attracted to sexy things. And maybe there's some pride there that we want to be seen a certain way.
Right.
That when you learn to let that go is when you discover the beauty of the ordinary. It's kind of like the Office principle, right? It's like one of the last lines in the series finale of The Office. Pam says, I was surprised that you wanted to do a documentary on a paper company. I mean, we're just so ordinary. But then, isn't that the point?
Mm-hmm.
There's something beautiful in the ordinary. I'm pretty sure I butchered that line, so you can go watch it. But I thought that was such a profound way to end that show, to draw attention to the fact that in the regular, everyday, ongoing life of a boring paper company is where you find humor and joy and also sadness and sorrow. And yes, some of that was totally over the top for the purposes of entertainment.
Right.
But what made those stories so good was that they connected to real life experiences. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of us have known that awkward boss who was trying too hard. We know people who met in the office and had an office romance and fell in love, mm-hmm. or broke up. You know, we know Dwight.
Right.
Right. You know, so yes, it was over the top, but at the same time, it was true that in the ordinary is where beauty really happens for a lot of us.
Yeah.
It's just ironic that we fight against it.
Well, and the thing that, like, we miss when we read the Gospels is how much time Jesus spent walking around with people, right? Like, yes. And that he had a group of disciples who were fishermen, and he didn't try to do new exciting things with them, right? He wasn't teaching fishermen how to hang glide. He was going fishing with fishermen and embracing the ordinariness of travel by foot and the ordinariness of, blue-collar work. And I think that, like, because we go straight to, like, the the teachings or the miracle stories, like we miss that context. Mm-hmm. The discipleship that transformed 12 men into the originators of the greatest movement mankind has ever seen took place mostly walking along a seashore or in a fishing boat. You know, I'll say what has helped me, and whenever if I can like turn back to this, it helps me a lot. What's helped me is submitting myself to a schedule.
Yeah.
And I learned this because a few years ago I ran a marathon, which is probably a bad idea because I'd never done anything athletic in my life before. And my knees have never been the same. But anyway, I decided to run a marathon. I've probably even told this story on the podcast before, but I got a calendar. Like I didn't know how to do it. And I researched like, how do you train for a marathon? And there were literally training schedules. And it was like, you need to run 3 to 5 days a week, and you need to run this much, and over, you know, a 12 week period, you're going to run this much on week one and this much on week two. So what I found though, as I started working this calendar, is that other things in my life started to fall in order. It was really strange. It was like, I had to, you know, it's Austin, Texas, 110 degrees all summer. So I'm going to have to wake up a little earlier, and I'm going to have my clothes laid out. I'm going to have found a route to go run. I have to have water and snacks and a way to get back. And I have to know ahead of time, like each day, about that. And so in having to plan for that one little thing, I started seeing that I had to plan for other things, and little disparate parts of my life got a little more organized because I had that one organized thing. There was a lot of beauty to that of, you know, I will say, like, I was super busy. I was adding an hour, sometimes two to four hours a day worth of extra stuff into my life. I found that I often fit other things in that were important because I was more organized. And the big takeaway that I always, when I talk about that time with people, I try to say that, you know, any discipline is a spiritual discipline. You know, there's nothing necessarily spiritual about running. Some people will say it will, but any discipline is a spiritual discipline, and that it can shape your spirit. And so I would just say, like, the best thing about ordinary days is that we can embrace our need for that kind of discipline just to get the basic stuff done every day. And that God does meet us there, partly because we're available for him to meet. You know, if I'm always trying to go on a crazy trip, or if I'm always trying to watch the next show, or go to the next concert, or run the next race, you know, it's almost like God's wondering when I'm gonna come and see him.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and it's just like, if I say, well, no, you know, let's do the things I have to do anyway. I still have to wash my underwear. I still have to, you know, clean the kitchen. And those are times where that spiritual mountaintop experience is waiting for me.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not there, you know, like I tell that racing story because it happened that one time I was marathon training. But since then, I have tried to find other rhythms, right? So I do have, you know, spiritual practices that I try to do every day, and they're not always great, but I do try to do them every day.
Yeah.
And that to me is the beauty of ordinary days, is just like, what are we going to do every day?
Yep. And I like that. I like that a lot.
What else?
I'm good. I think that's it for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, so we talked about Daredevil.
Yeah.
You know what I watched last night, though?
The Flash?
I saw the season finale of The Flash.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I think Daredevil is probably the best superhero show ever made.
Sure.
But if you just have to watch one, I might tell you to watch The Flash.
I love The Flash. Aaron and I watched The Flash this season together. And we watched from episode one. And so much happened this season. Mm-hmm. They did a really good job of telling really good stories. And there were, of course, filler episodes, but they were told in such a way that it never felt like a filler episode. It was always... and then when you find the season finale, you realize that there were no filler episodes. Like, everything was built to serve a purpose for this reason or that reason.
Yeah, yeah. I was blown away. It felt like, I feel like Doctor Who wants to feel sometimes, like all these parts come together. And in a really kind of Dickensian way. Like the finale was very Tale of Two Cities. And I was just, I was thrilled. So watch them both, but if you have to watch one, watch The Flash. Even though it's like having 12 Shatners on screen all the time.
I think you're first with that. I think they did a good job. They didn't take themselves too seriously. That's what made The Flash so good. They knew they were comic booky because they're The Flash, and they embraced that.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, man, I'm not joking, I've gotta go clean my kitchen.
All right, buddy.
So,
Have a good. I'm gonna clean my desktop up because there's just a lot of folders and it looks like chaos right now.
You talking about your digital desktop or your?
My digital desktop.
Yeah. Well, here's to being less of a digital hoarder.
Indeed. All right, buddy.
All right, man. Well, I'm going to press the stop button now.
Good time.